The following program may contain subject matter and language not suitable for all ages. If you are sensitive to true crime details or adult language, perhaps you might want to check out some of our other shows on the network, which are safe for all ages. So with viewer and listener discretion advised, let's get to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Murder Mysteries and More. My name is Nicole Mancha, and today it is just me and our lovely co-host and producer, Mike Mercado.
Hello, lovely Nicole. How are you doing today?
Oh, you know, living the dream.
Yeah, how's 2020 treating you?
Pretty good. It's not, I mean, we had a cold day a little while ago, but it's predominantly not horrible.
Oh, interesting, because the reason that we are doing today's episode of The Inspiration is because of the potential of World War III. So I figured I'd jump into the military and to some other countries on this episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. We find an amazing story, or an infamous story, from colonel to killer. We talk about David Russell Williams. Nicole, have you ever heard of David Russell Williams before I sent you the notes?
No, I did not actually, which is surprising for me.
So this is one of those crazy stories that you would think happened in Florida, but it actually happened in the Great White North known as Canada.
Oh, Canada?
Yes. Hey guys, Mike here. So before we get to today's episode, I wanted to make sure that I put this right here. I wanted to give some credit to the source that we use for the information on this discussion in our two-part series on David Russell Williams. So on top of a lot of different podcasts that I listen to, a lot of different videos and documentaries that I watch, one of the main sources of today's subject is by Patrick Legenti from Vice. He did a wonderful series called Top Officer in the Military, also a serial killer. So check that out on Vice and also some of the other great true crime podcasts and videos about David Russell Williams. So with that, please enjoy this conversation in our two-part series on the former colonel turned killer, David Russell Williams. Enjoy. So we start off in March 7th of 1963 in Bromsgrove, England, to Cedric David Williams and Christine Nani Williams as they gave birth to Russell Williams. So we have an English-born man who would eventually make his way to Canada when they moved to Chalk River, Ontario. His father was hired as a metallurgist. Have you ever heard that before?
No, I'm not sure what it is exactly.
So he worked at Chalk River Laboratories, Canada's premier nuclear research laboratory. After relocating to Chalk River, the Williams family met another family, the Sovkas, and they became good friends. The families would spend a lot of time together. But Williams' parents would get divorced when he was 6 years old. And soon after, Nani Williams married Jerry Sovka, the father of the Sovka's families that they were super close with. During this time, Williams took on the name of his stepfather and moved again to Scarborough, Ontario. So that's pretty intense. I didn't see a lot of information about his dad, but what do you think that says about him taking the name of his stepfather and not keeping his father's name?
I mean, he probably had a better relationship with him because a lot of times, and it's not all of the time, but there are a lot of situations when divorce happens and fathers aren't, they don't see their kid as often, just like typically with the laws, they're more preferential to the mom. So seeing him maybe every other week and depending on the type of father he was, he just may not have seen him even that much. So maybe the predominant male figure in the house was who he was more drawn to.
So while in the Scarborough Bluffs area, Williams began high school at Toronto's Birchmount Collegiate but finished at Upper Canada College. He delivered the Globe and Mail newspaper and even learned piano. By 1979, his family had moved to South Korea, where his stepfather was overseeing another reactor project. Williams completed his final 2 years of high school as a boarding student at Toronto's Upper Canada College while his parents were in South Korea. In his final year in 1982, he was elected as one of two prefects for the boarding house.
Prefects.
What's that?
Prefect is like the head boy of the house, so the one who probably has like the best grades and is the, like in Harry Potter, you have the prefects.
Prefects.
They're the ones who get like the best grades, they follow the rules, like that's, they're the ones that kind of think about the line leader.
Okay, so a prefect is a line leader, and reported to his House steward, Andrew Sexton, now the Conservative Member of Parliament for North Vancouver. And you know what's interesting that I think a lot of people in the United States forget sometimes, and it really piqued my interest when I was doing this. People think Canada is America. People in the United States, they think it's the same thing. Like, it's the same rules apply and it's ran the same. Like, Canada is so different than the United States when it comes to the way it's structured, the way they go about certain things, the way compared to the United States. It's really interesting, though, that people in this country, here in Chicago, we're just, what, 13 hours away from Canada?
No, we're like 4.5 hours away from...
Shut up.
Yeah, from Windsor, Canada.
Okay, so the fact that we don't know that we think it's the same place as going to Detroit, Michigan, and just across the lake, it's not. It's completely different.
Well, and it's interesting because I actually do this like writer's group, and this woman works for a company based in Canada. And it was funny because obviously the biggest thing that we all worry about here is like insurance and how to get that covered and making sure our jobs have it and all that kind of stuff. Her company, their home base is in Canada. And for a while, they just kind of like forgot to like start up her stuff because they didn't even think about it because it's just part of their system there. And she's like, guys, I need my insurance stuff filled out because it wasn't like they were doing it on purpose. They just honestly, it just kind of didn't cross their minds. So like it's an entirely different system.
So Williams enrolled in the Canadian Forces in 1987 after graduating from the University of Toronto with an economics and political science degree.
Sounds right.
Williams was regarded as a model military man over the course of his 23-year career. He received his flying wings in 1990 and posted to 3 Canadian Force Flying Training School, based at CFB Portage La Prière, Manitoba, where he served for 2 years as an instructor. So we're talking about a pilot.
Yeah.
Like, that's impressive. Like, in the United States, we think of pilots as, like, this next-level type of thing, like the cool jacket, Top Gun Maverick, like, right. Astronauts. Like, there's something kind of crazy about a pilot being like this. On June 1st, 1991, he married Mary Elizabeth Herrmann, who was an associate director of the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada. Now, I'm going to have some thoughts on the wife as we continue on with this series because she's successful before him.
Right.
She's has her own ambitions with him and whatnot, but for her to live with this guy throughout this entire thing, I always find it fascinating when we talk about the partners and depending on the killer, we see the wife as she couldn't do anything or she was quote unquote weak because of how dominant the serial killer was, the husband was. Mm-hmm. You don't really find that here in this thing. And as the story goes on, you'll see that. I wonder why she stuck around. I wonder why she never noticed anything when she's so predominantly such a focused person.
So I think that sometimes, especially with people who are so public with everything, it's a lot about persona and that divorce isn't pretty. It's not cute. It's ugly. You know what I mean? There's a reason why, like, the Clintons stayed married.
Sure.
Right? Like, there is something nasty and dirty about divorce in our society for some reason, even though a lot of times it ends up being for a better reason. But this situation kind of makes me feel like that, where it's more so that it was a status thing opposed to, you know, anything besides that. And because I don't think that it's always that women in these situations are weak. There are obviously abuse in a lot of situations, but I think sometimes it's divorce isn't pretty. It's nasty.
So according to the Canadian Defense Department Williams biography that he had, Williams is a keen photographer, fisherman, and runner. And he and his wife, Mary Elizabeth, are also avid golfers.
Does she go by Mary Elizabeth in everything?
I don't know. Okay. Every time I saw her name come up, it was Mary Elizabeth. So okay.
I have an issue with two names. There's nothing wrong with it per se, but it's always like the two names like in the front. And then like for men too, like when they go by the two names, I'm always like, I just feel like it's got serial killer vibes to it.
First hot take of 2020 goes to Nicole Mancha. No double names on Murder Mysteries and More. Unless you're the serial killer.
No, but it's also like the people who are like two first names as their first and last name.
Sure.
Doesn't that make you feel uneasy?
Everything makes me feel uneasy. I do a true crime halftime show. Promoted to captain on January 1st, 1991, Williams was posted to the 434 Combat Support Squadron at CFB Shearwater in 1992, where he flew the CC-144 Challenger in the Electronic Warfare and Coastal Patrol role. In 94, he was posted to the 412 Transport Squadron in Ottawa, where he transported VIPs, including high-ranking government officials and foreign dignitaries, also on Challengers. So it's always kind of fascinating in retrospect when you're like, man, he had all these important people's lives in his hand, never did anything with it.
It's interesting when you're reading these things, because I think just in general, the way especially you and I were raised is that we have this respect, right, for the military.
Sure, yeah.
So, like, when you're reading this, it almost sounds like you're impressed.
Well, you have to be impressed. It doesn't, yeah, the crime is absolutely disgusting, but the fact remains is he accomplished a bunch of stuff. That's the tragedy in it, is yeah. The tragedy, besides the loss of life and the violence of it, is he had everything. He was a colonel in the army, and it's in the Canadian army, asterisk for here us in America. But, like, that's the idea. That's what's tragic about it. Like, we expect the drifter to be the serial killer. Right. But, like, the colonel?
Yeah.
The house dad? That's why these are fascinating cases.
Sure. That makes sense.
Williams was promoted to major in 1999 and was posted to direct general military careers in Ottawa, where he served as the multi-engine pilot career manager. So now, again, this guy ends up having a bunch of people's careers in his hand.
Yeah.
So I find that kind of interesting, what kind of parallel that had of him always being in control, always having these positions of power. Maybe that's why he wasn't a serial killer. Why he doesn't have possibly hundreds of murders, opposed to what he has told us and what we'll find out in the series.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got those. They say a lot of like CEOs have like sociopathic tendencies, and he definitely seems to have that, where it's like he's moving up and he obviously likes to be in positions of power, and whether or not that's part of the feed to his ego, as well as being able to commit these crimes while doing this. I think that might be a little like, oh, look how important I am, and I'm still able to do these things.
Williams obtained a Master's of Defense Studies from the Royal Military College of Canada in 2004 with a 55-page thesis that supported preemptive war in Iraq. And in June 2004, he was promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. And on July 19, 2004, he was appointed Commanding Officer of the 437 Transport Squadron at CFB Trenton, Ontario, a post he held for 2 years. December of 2005 to May of 2006, Williams also served as the Commanding Officer of Camp Mirage, a secretive logistics facility based to be located at the Al Mahad Air Base in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, that provides support to Canadian forces operations in Afghanistan. So he's in the thick of things during this crazy time. The couple would move to Orleans, a suburb in Ottawa, in July of 2006. By then, Williams had been posted Directorate of the Air Requirements at NDHQ. He served at the Airlift Compatibility Project Strategic and Tactical and Fixed Wing Search and Rescue. When you hear these words behind the back of your head, because there's many names and numbers.
Yeah.
But what you start noticing when, you know, we talk about right here in July of 2006, he served as a project director. And then in 2009, he went to the foreign language school in Quebec for 6 month period of French language training. And then to be promoted by colonel by recommendations of now retired General Angus Watt. All you hear is a lot of mumble jumble, but that's how entwined he was. That's how much of a military man he really was. How ingrained he was in the system that he just kept moving up the system.
Yeah.
And then you have him go to France to get promoted by somebody that we found would be a friend in General Angus Watt. So on July 15th, 2009, Williams was sworn in as a wing commander at Canadian Force Base in Trenton. Canadian Force Base Trenton is Canada's busiest air base and locus of support of overseas military operations. Located in Trenton, Ontario, the base also functions as the point of arrival for bodies of all Canadian forces personnel killed in Afghanistan, and the starting point for funeral processions along the Highway of Heroes, whence their bodies are brought to Toronto for autopsy. And that really stuck out to me, because you have this guy who would be so violent, so deprived of like decency, would be so involved and ingrained in something so sacred, which is our war heroes, our boys coming back home, and he's there. He's part of that. Like, that's where he's at, and yet he's one of the biggest monsters that they've ever seen, especially in the military.
But I think it's clear, like, he had a respect for the military, but as we'll find out later, that respect does not go over to the opposite sex. Like, the respect for the military, I think, is completely different to him.
So Williams has been described as an elite pilot and, quote, shining bright star of the military. He had flown Queen Elizabeth II and the Duke of Edinburgh, the Governor General of Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada, and many other dignitaries across Canada and overseas in the Canadian Forces VIP aircraft. So that is the accomplishments. That is the resume. That is the backdrop of who this man is. Now, if you didn't see these notes, if you didn't know who this person was, could you ever imagine this man doing what he ended up doing, Nicole?
No, I mean, he sounds like he would be a stand-up guy, but then, as we've now learned.
All that being said, there is the truth, and there is the part that everybody has to acknowledge. It doesn't matter your accomplishments. They didn't matter your resume. This dude did some gnarly things, and it's time to break all that down, because on February 7th, 2010, the CFB Trenton Base Commander was at his newly built home in Ottawa, where his wife lived full-time and he lived part-time, when he was called by the OPP in Ottawa and asked to come in for questioning. Williams was interrogated at the Ottawa Police Service headquarters by Detective Sergeant Jim Smith, a member of the Ontario Provincial Police Behavioral Science Unit. The interview started at 3 p.m., and by 7:45 p.m., he was describing his crimes. The interrogation lasted approximately 10 hours. Experts of the confession were shown in court at Williams' sentencing hearing on October 20th, 2010. And since then, we've gotten some crazy, crazy articles and diagnoses from different experts that we'll break down in this series. In the confession, Williams gave details of his crimes, including the sexual assaults in Tweed, and 82 break-ins and thefts.
That's crazy.
Some of them occurred in Ottawa homes within walking distance of his Orleans, Ontario home where he lived with his wife. Other break-ins and thefts occurred in Belleville and in Tweed, where the couple had a cottage since 2004. Early the next morning, Williams led investigators to would-be body of Jessica Lloyd in a secluded area on Carey Road, about 13 minutes away from where he lived. Williams would also be charged in the death of Corporal Mary France Camot, a 37-year-old military flight attendant based at CFB Trenton, who had been found dead inside her home in late November of 2009. See, Williams' earliest known crime was committed in September of 2007, when he first began breaking into the homes of his neighbors in Tweed, a town of 1,800 people about 50 kilometers north of Belleville, itself just west of Kingston, straddling Highway 401 between Montreal and Toronto. The first victims were a family that lived just a few doors down from the cottage Williams owned with his wife on Cozy Cove Lane. That is so creepy, the right? fact that all this happens on Cozy Cove Lane. The family was friendly with the childless Williamses, enough to have them over for dinner and go fishing together on Stelco Lake. Williams would repay their friendship by breaking into their house three times. If you didn't think and didn't adhere to the warning that we have in the beginning of every episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More, things get graphic here. You should know better by now, but just your last warning. According to the Toronto Star, on one occasion, Williams took a photo of himself lying naked on the bed, masturbating with red pants he believed to have belonged to his neighbor's 12-year-old daughter. 14 of those photos he took that night show him with, quote, his penis protruding from the stolen underwear. He left a message in her computer saying, quote, merci, thank you, in French. The Crown attorney Robert Morrison said this would become a pattern. Over 2 years, Williams would break into homes and steal, dress up, and masturbate in the clothes of women and girls, some as young as 9 years old.
Morrison said he would first photograph the bedroom of his victim, then the underwear in her dresser. He would then arrange the lingerie neatly on a bed or floor before modeling them and ejaculating. Another ritual was to turn his back to the camera and peer back over the shoulder. There were also many close-ups of his penis protruding from women's underwear, said Morrison. So you could picture in your head, and I think I'm going to make it the thumbnail of this episode, is the hookup picture that she put on social media where you have your back to the camera and the girl has her face facing that way. Mm-hmm. That's the picture. And it is extremely, knowing what happens, it's extremely disturbing. But what do you think that is? Obviously, we know how complicated the human mind is, how people feel about their sexuality. But with the violence and everything that you're seeing right here, mm-hmm. what do you think it is about this tough guy, this military man, then going so far into being like, I want to dress like women and like girls?
I mean, I don't know if it's, like I said, it's one of those things where you can't really know what's in someone's mind. Some men enjoy cross-dressing but aren't gay. Like, there's no correlation, actually, with the two. But
so it has to be an old school mentality that he had, right?
Oh, like, yeah. It's usually an old school mentality. I had a friend who actually was a dominatrix, and she said that a lot of times men would come to her to do things like that because it wasn't sexual, because you can be a dominatrix in Chicago, but you can't have any sexual act towards these men. But, like, a lot of times they would just ask to, like, be able to put on nylons or high heels, but their wives were so... they weren't open to their kink. And so that created a lot of tension as well, because it was, again, it's associated with something else. And I think that it could have been that. It also could just be some people that's just their kink. But I think for him, it was still a power play. It was still like, I can do this to you without you knowing. And this is me controlling that situation. Mm-hmm. And it seems his entire career was built on continuing power. And here he's doing these things with them not even knowing. It's like, look how close I can get. Look what I can do. And you don't even know.
And you call me friend. Yes. And you feed me. Let
and
me
you
in your house.
Trust mm-hmm. me.
By September, Williams told police that he needed more stimulation, more risk. And so at around 1 a.m. on September 17th, dressed in all in black and with his face covered, Williams entered the home of a 21-year-old woman near Tweed as she slept. He woke her with a blow to her head and quickly subdued her. He struck her several more times before he bound her hands and covered her face with a pillowcase. The woman told investigators that Williams pulled aside her tank top, fondled her breast, and photographed her naked. Then he took some lingerie, a baby blanket, and fled. Less than 2 weeks later, on September 30th, Williams struck again. The victim this time, a 46-year-old mother of three in Tweed. She was asleep on a couch in front of the TV when Williams broke in and began punching her and wrapping her in a blanket. He tied her up, blindfolded her, and kept her under his control for 3.5 hours. Over the course of her confinement, Williams fondled her breasts, took photos, and at one point pulled out a knife and cut her clothes off. Eventually, after taking more photographs, he left. He went across the street to his cottage. That was the third and final time Williams would break into her home. The violation.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one of the main reasons we haven't done BTK.
Yeah.
Is Dennis Rader really creeps me out in like in a way where I wish I could strangle him. He's like one of the rare guys, like, I wish I could murder myself. But there's something so brutal, and maybe it's because I watch way too much television and graphic stuff, but the idea of being struck in the head like that, like, I've played sports, I have brothers, like, there's been plenty of times where we knock each other silly sometimes, but, like, being hit in the head because somebody wants you to be hurt is so disturbing. And, like, there's something so sickening about the sound of head hitting pavement or anything hitting the skull that's what really stuck with me when we got to the first time of his crimes.
Yeah, I think for me it's always been the idea of going into their homes. Your home is supposed to be your safe place, and when these things kind of happen, it's always unnerving for people whose houses get broken into and they're not there. You know what I mean? Because they're like, oh, someone was in my home. But to know that someone's in your home while you're there thinking that they can get away with it, that's always been really unnerving to me. And I think that for me personally, I would be shocked if that was just his escalation, was just breaking into their house. I would put money on it that he was a peeping Tom before all of that, because that's usually how it starts out.
And that is a great word you use, as escalation, because that is exactly what Williams does throughout this entire series, throughout his entire run. Almost through his entire life, it's just this escalation, whether it was success in his career to what he would end up doing as this deviant of a human. It all comes full circle. We go from breaking and entering women's lingerie, stealing these things, to sexually assaulting them, to the very next step.
Yeah.
And we go to November 16, 2009, when Williams broke into the Brighton, Ontario home of Mary France Comeau, a military flight attendant who worked at CFB Trenton. He told Smith that he confirmed that she lived alone with her two cats, took some pictures of himself and in her underwear, then left. He returned 8 days later to commit his first murder. And that's what will kick off the continuation of our series of David Russell Williams. Lovely Nicole Macho, what have you thought about part one of our very deep dive, interesting conversation and file opening of David Russell Williams, the former Canadian colonel who would become a killer?
It's horrifying. Like, it's just the things that he did and the way he did it is just such a violation of privacy and personal space and just a person. It's sick, and that he was in such power. That's what's more upsetting, I think, than anything.
Thank you all so much for joining us on this episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. When we join you on the next episode, we will continue and conclude this episode of David Russell Williams. Hopefully the good brother himself is back. But until then, love to know, Comancha, any final thoughts? What are you looking forward to 2020? And what has piqued your interest most about maybe this episode or an episode that you're working on? Just a little chitter chatter before we let the fine folks continue on with their day.
So I'm really excited for a project that we've been working on here in the studios.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to talk a little bit about, so we can spoil a little bit since we have a little bit of time, since this is going to be a two-parter. The Love and Nicole Mancha with some other lovely, talented people are going to be doing a little bit of a spin-off of Murder, Mysteries, and More. And you officially decided on the title?
I think we have officially.
Do you want to save it until we know?
I do want to save it.
What's the concept of the show?
The concept of the show is we're going to talk a little bit more about women who have gone missing in mostly the Chicagoland area. We're also going to expand to the rest of the 50 states at some point, but we really want to start with Chicago and at least Illinois, because we just have a little bit more information we can get to. Because for those of you who don't know, I also help teach a class with a bunch of cops.
Sure.
So I can get a little bit more info than sometimes the average person can, just because I work so closely with them. But our podcast is really just going to focus on those women. We're particularly going to try and focus on women of color who didn't get enough time media. And the first show is definitely one that people around here will know. And we want to talk about it, because it's a great, really interesting just case, but also because of some things that happened more recently in the past few months with it. And we wanted to bring attention.
With all that work that you guys are putting in, that awesome show that we're going to be bringing down on Mercado Airwaves, we're going to let you know how you could find it, where you could find it, all that. This show isn't going anywhere. We're still be keeping Murder, Mysteries, and More. You're not going anywhere.
Nope.
You're just adding more work to already your busy schedule.
Well,
so that's the life of a Mercado Airwaves employee, and you get paid absolutely nothing. So you got to love it. But I think that's what you guys are doing is going to be so much fun. I think the fans are going to love it. I love the amount of work that's going to go into it. I'm not sure if it's going to be a weekly show, because it's going to be a lot of work and a lot of research. So perhaps we're still finding out the scheduling of it. But don't worry. This show, whether you hate it, you love it, we're white noise, if we're informational, the fact remains is we'll still be here. And we will continue on our conversation of David Russell Williams. But until then, follow the Lovely Nicole Mancha all over social media. Every one of her handles is at Typing When Tipsy. Good brother himself's on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. This show has an Instagram at Murder, Mysteries, and More. I'm on Twitter at Mike M Media and on Instagram at Mike Mercado Media. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves and our pop culture show on Twitter at Good Brother Pod. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/MikeMercado2333, or search Mercado Airwaves Network. Come play video games with us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. We would love to thank each and every one of you who has helped grow this channel in levels that we never thought possible over 2019. From all the different podcast networks that you guys listen to us, you guys have helped bring us to different heights, different levels that have brought us different opportunities. And we love you each for it. And we thank you so much. So continue spreading the word wherever you get your favorite podcast. Like us, give us 5 stars, rate us, review us, share us, wherever you get your favorite podcast at Mercado Airwaves. And while you're at it, if you would like to support the show on a different level, visit us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. We have a bunch of different cool tiers that you could join to support us. We have one where you get early access to all our interviews with athletes and celebrities before anybody else. We have tiers where you can enter contests to win prizes and so much more at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. For the good brother himself, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha.
Good night, everybody.
I'm Mike Mercado. We'll see you in the next episode of Murder
Mysteries
and more on the Mercado
Airwaves Network.
Hey guys, Mike here for Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at Mike M Media and on Instagram at Mike Mercado Media. You can follow the good brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at Typing When Tipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves, our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod, our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More, and of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on YouTube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network, and of course, you can support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win contests, prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the good brother, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. We wish you a happy, healthy holiday season and an awesome new year.